The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Derek Dorch of the Diversa Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and careers. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dorch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch for Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for stopping by the show. We are always glad to have you. Today, we're going to be talking about an interesting topic. We're going to be talking about human resources, but not human resources from the OPM or Office of Personnel Management dynamic or anything else. But we're talking about the Army, the Army's Human Resources Command. We have on the line with us Major General Thomas C. Siemens, and he wants to be called Tom, but I just want to give his whole title right there because he has that distinguished name. He's the commanding general of the U.S. Army Human Resources Command. They're out there in Fort Knox, Kentucky. Sir, thank you for coming on Fed Access.
Thanks, Derek. Appreciate the opportunity to tell the HRC story.
Outstanding. Sir, you know, a lot of people, you know, always hear about the Army and they hear about, you know, the combatant commands. They hear about, you know, special operations. They hear about all these other things, but they don't necessarily hear about kind of the HRC or the Human Resources Command and what you guys do to support all of these other elements. Sir, tell us about what HRC does.
Well, Derek, thanks. We're involved from the accessions as a citizen becomes a soldier, all the way through their time in uniform, up to the time they leave and beyond. We take care of veterans and retirees as well. Our mission is really to build readiness across the Army. The Chief Staff of the Army has three basic priorities that he has: the current fight, the future fight, taking care of soldiers and families, and that's exactly what HRC does. To give you an idea of the scope of what we do, I have the honor of being one of 3,600 great Americans that wakes up every morning to determine what we can do to take care of soldiers and families around the world, really. That comprised of about 960,000 soldiers, about 475,000 of them active, the rest are Reserve and Guard. We take care of about 1 million retirees and about 4 million veterans out there who have about 20,000 inquiries throughout the year. We send 60,000 soldiers off to school every year to be developed and educated. We have run about 100 selection boards. One of our key missions that we do here at HRC is the Casualty Memorial Affairs. So when a soldier is injured, wounded, or killed anywhere in the world, we are the bridge between the soldier, the unit, and the family, making sure they get the right support that they need. We do military mail around the globe. We have a call center here at HRC that handles about 350,000 different inquiries. Many of them are HRC lane, others outside the lane in areas like Veterans Affairs. In those cases, we actually have a pretty good referral network to get them to where they want to be so they don't get the runaround. A big part of our organization is IT as well. We have about 2,000 servers across the command. We handle about 17 million documents every year. And we do everything from the accessions piece for recruiting command, cadet command, all of the personnel platforms while they're in, and then support after they depart. So really, it's a from accessions, bringing our citizens in to be soldiers the whole time they're here, as well as after they leave, making sure they get the support they need.
Outstanding. Sir, you know, I was reading your bio, and you've been around to a little bit of everything, Fort Bragg and Pacific and all the other areas. You know, as you've looked at your career, and I even kind of want to hear a little bit about it, because in putting it in context in terms of you have seen the transition of human resources and you've seen the need, what soldiers need. I talk to your people and they tell them that you like to go around and hear from the different soldiers, and you've seen it yourself, but you're also talking to the soldiers right now in terms of, you know, what do they need in order to be ready? What do they need in order to be effective? What's from your own background and from what you're hearing, what's being said?
Well, you do make a great point. I've seen the Army transition quite a bit. I mean, when I first came in the Army, we didn't have computers.
Right.
I went to a briefing as a lieutenant, and they said that at some point, every general in the Army would have a computer. And I remember thinking, why would a general need a computer? It's hard to imagine not having a computer,
right,
not only for a general, but all the way down to our newest soldiers. It's really fundamental to what we do. About a year into the Army, we actually got our first computer in my unit. And I remember watching we had a professional development session where we showed everybody what the computer was, and everybody was pretty amazed.
Like, wow, huh?
Exactly. So from that point to where we are now, it's absolutely amazing. I think that's key to our future, making sure we can leverage technology out there and balancing that with never losing the human touch. We never want to be so automated that we forget that at the end of every phone call, email, text, is a soldier, their family, their dreams, their aspirations and goals, and we can never forget that across the board.
Right.
I'll also tell you, as I travel around, one of the great things I get to do is listen to commanders, understand what's on their mind, things like the drawdown, get a chance to interface with soldiers, commanders, and first sergeants and command sergeant majors across the Army and understand what they're thinking, what their concerns are. Things like the drawdown, as the Army's getting smaller, how do we do that? How do we do that on the readiness perspective to have a better Army after the drawdown is done? And in the meantime, taking care of those soldiers, great Americans who are doing some heavy lifting for our nation. But because the Army is getting smaller, we don't need as many officers and soldiers across the force. And at the end, being able to take care of the soldiers who stay in place. So there is some angst in the field across the Army. It's our job to make sure we recognize that angst, if you will, to get inside the head of a sergeant, to get inside the head of a captain, understand how they're thinking, what they're concerned about, and addressing it. And as we address it, frankly, being completely transparent and honest with them, because we owe them honesty. We've been a nation at war, an army at war for 15 years, and we owe them the transparency. We owe them an honest dialogue. As we've gone through the drawdown, we've done a number of things that are different on this drawdown, the previous drawdowns, which I think get to the human touch. For example, every officer who's identified to leave early is counseled. They are given up to a year to transition as they leave. The Secretary of the Army in Congress has given us authority to do a temporary early retirement authority, which means if you have 15 years or more, you're entitled to retire by being separated and get a separation pay. So we're doing a lot of things to make sure that we recognize that this generation of soldiers, those over the last 15 years, are treated with dignity and respect and a proper send-off, where they leave uniform after 4 or 40 years.
You know, sir, as you look at it, and you've achieved a lot in your career, and as you kind of look at maybe future soldiers or people who are coming in, or maybe even your current soldiers, you know, it is a different time period where people may not be able to do the 20 years they wanted to, or 30 years in the military. You know, what do you say to officers who come in, or the young officers who want to make that career and kind of achieve what you have achieved and get to those ranks of that general officer or maybe a colonel or so? Is it becoming more competitive? Is it you know, something that now people say, listen, I've got to, you know, do school more. I've got to, you know, get these certain kind of commands more. Or as a young enlisted person, I've got to do these things. How do you counsel people?
Well, first of all, Derek, to be a general, there's a whole lot of luck involved. And I say that not out of a false sense of humility.
Yes, sir.
But as someone who had the opportunity to manage the generals in the Army, it's huge, huge amount of luck involved. So on any given day, it's really tough as the Army is getting smaller. Not only for promotion to general, but promotion to sergeant, promotion to staff sergeant. One of the things that a lot of people don't recognize, of our great sergeant first class, that's an E7 in the Army, only about 10 or 12% of them make master sergeant, and only about 10 or 12% of the master sergeants make sergeant major. It's very competitive from a young soldier all the way up to general officer. So my advice would be to do what you love, find your passion, and not worry about your evaluations, not worry about where you end up. Because I think sometimes we lose focus. Promotion to lieutenant colonel is success in the Army for an officer, and promotion to sergeant first class is success for an NCO.
Right.
The fact that somebody's in uniform sends a couple messages. One, it says that as a citizen, they want to be part of something bigger than themselves. They raised their right hand, took an oath to support and defend the Constitution. They represent the one out of three Americans who's qualified to come in the Army. And they represent about 1% of the population that actually has served in uniform and gone above and beyond to do great things. So I think there's a lot of sense of satisfaction and purpose in that alone. I don't think as a whole, people tend to focus on promotions. They want to do the right thing.
Right.
They want to be part of a winning team, and they want to make our country safe.
You know, as we look at it, and sorry, you know, I served in the Marine Corps, and I had that, you know, similar experiences of seeing the days of automation, of not having automated Marine Corps, maybe a couple computers here and there, to now seeing all this stuff online and everything else. And, you know, we had the Marine for life, and I've seen Soldier for life. Is that where the focus is right now, about kind of, you know, saying, hey, listen, for our veterans, we still want you to be engaged? And with that engagement, with the Soldier for Life and other programs like that, what does that engagement involve? I mean, do you still want the veterans to contribute to certain things in a certain kind of way? Do you still want to hear their voices? And also, what support do you want to give them?
Absolutely, Derek. Great question. You know, our mission, if you step back a little bit, would be to take about 100,000 citizens every year, bringing them into what I would argue is the nation's premier leadership experience, educate them, train them, fundamentally change them, return them at some point as better citizens into our communities around the country and around the world. And as they look back on their time in the Army, have a very positive experience and be able to tell other people what the positive experience is. We've done a lot of things to help our veterans transition for all the right reasons. Congress has given us some authorities and some funds to make sure our veterans have a smooth takeoff as they leave. This might surprise you, but two of the MOS or specialties that are the highest unemployment challenges as they came out were actually medics and truck drivers.
Wow.
And that may sound counterintuitive, but what we found is we didn't have a good credentialing program. So we had a great Army truck driver, but we had nothing to show the civilian driving world that what they were prepared to do. We had great medics, but they weren't necessarily certified in the civilian world. So we've taken the credentialing on head on to identify whatever programs are out there that will help the transition as a soldier leaves. Congress has also helped us by encouraging us to have a one-year process to get a soldier ready to leave. So they go through a Soldier for Life transition program. And in the transition program, there are a number of classes. They learn how to write a resume. They learn educational opportunities. So whatever they're going to do after they hang up the uniform, they're going to be successful. We also are very active in engaging and encouraging our soldiers who are leaving the active force to consider the Guard and the Reserve, because those are great opportunities to continue to contribute long after they've left and continue to have a positive impact on their communities and our Army.
You know, I want to hit on all of you hit about several different points I want to touch on. So we got to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to touch on a lot of different pieces, because you had a lot of great information right there for people to think about. And even for people who are maybe future soldiers or people, you know, kind of saying, hey, listen, I'm currently in and I'm thinking about my career and thinking towards afterwards about thinking about the Reserve and the Guard and other areas like that. We're talking to Major General Thomas C. Siemens. He's the commanding general of U.S. Army Human Resources Command. They're down in Fort Knox. We're talking about Army Human Resources. We're talking about the future of the Army. We're talking about the current Army and also making sure that our soldiers and our veterans are taken care of. We're talking about all these issues right now on Fed Access. We'll be right back after this break. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we have been talking about human resources, but not from the Office of Personnel Management side, not from the private sector, but actually from the Army side, the Army Human Resources Command. Not many people haven't heard about it unless you're probably in the Army in either the military side or maybe the civilian side, but they've got a whole branch that supports all the soldiers, making sure that they're ready, making sure that they have all the things in order to basically protect our country and do the work overseas and also domestically as well. We're talking to the commanding general, Army Human Resources Command, Major General Thomas C. Siemens. He's out there at Fort Knox. We've got him on the line, and we've kind of been breaking down everything that's going on and how to make sure soldiers are ready and also make sure people are transitioned to being veterans but still contributing back to the Army in a positive way. Sir, you kind of mentioned a couple of different things, and I wanted to touch on it. You know, as we look at the Reserve and the Guard and kind of the importance of that, are we seeing those elements become even more important kind of post-war? I know they were tapped in heavily during the wartime. Are we seeing that also now become part of the readiness function of our country to make sure that if you're leaving active duty, you can swing into the Guard and Reserve and still wear that uniform but be ready if something goes off?
Absolutely, Derek. As we take a look at things, we really talk about total force, total Army, which includes the active, the Guard, and the Reserve. making sure we're optimizing the talent across the board. And we try and look at it pretty much holistically. One of the challenges the Reserve and Guard have is they have a shortage of mid-grade NCOs, sergeant, staff sergeant, sergeant first class, as well as mid-grade officers, captains, and majors. And that, so that's a great opportunity for us to encourage those officers and NCOs who are leaving the Army, for whatever reason they leave the Army, to think about going to the Reserves and the Guard. There are some great programs out there. For example, at Fort Hood, we have a pilot program that is designed to encourage people to think about the soldiers think about the Reserves. And then if they, for example, are in a specialty that they need retraining in, to give them that retraining while they're in active duty. So when they do transition out of the active force and go to the reserve unit, they don't have to go to their employer and say, boss, I need 2 months off to go back for Army training. We can take care of that up front. And that builds for better reserve units and better guard units, which makes for a better total force.
You know, are you seeing, sir, right now, I mean, you know, that we've always had that the ESGR in terms of the support for the Guard and Reserve, the employer support. Are you seeing, you know, because you're talking to different people and you're talking to the reserve units and the guard units and maybe even talking to employers, is that support there now for the Guard and Reserve that's needed? I mean, especially as we've been in a time of war, are there still difficulties or are we past that?
Derek, I'll tell you, you would be incredibly inspired when you talk to the employers that are out there. The America at large really is very supportive of all the services, but the Army in particular, making sure that the soldiers have the time they need to train. I'm sure there are some isolated cases where there's some challenges, but by and large, I'll tell you, the system is working. The employers across the country are very supportive of the military.
You know, as we began looking at kind of the Guard and Reserve and the kind of the transition, you also mentioned a couple other pieces in terms of that transition and Soldier for Life and the year-long programs about building the resume. At one point in time, that was the challenge, right? I mean, it was about, you know, 3-6 months before. I hear now it's a year. Are we seeing the success in the transition right now? Are we also seeing that support more? I know there were different companies. I've had them on the show, Bank of America, you know, JP Morgan Chase and other things like that, the Hire a Hero programs. Are we seeing a lot more support in terms of the hiring the veterans? What are you seeing?
Absolutely. All the Fortune 500 companies are reaching out to us, as well as the local companies. They're very interested in having veterans on their team. The post 9/11 GI Bill gives a soldier the opportunity to leave, get educated, get their degree if they don't have their degree, and then be able to re-enter the workforce. To give you kind of a scope of what we do to give opportunity while they're in uniform, we spent about $230 million in 2015 on tuition assistance to allow a soldier to go back while they're on active duty and get their degree. We spent about $48 million for advanced civil schooling for post-bachelor degrees to get people out there to get their education. To give you a scope of how educated our great Army is today, there are about 960,000 soldiers across the active Guard and Reserve. About 272,000 of them have a degree. So almost one out of every three soldier has a degree, whether it's associate, bachelor, master's, or even PhDs. Hmm. And as we educate them while they're in uniform, they transition very well. To kind of give you a scope of the effect of what Army's effort for Soldier for Life, if you go back about 5 years, Derek, we were spending about $500 million, $500 million on unemployment compensation for the soldiers who left the Army and were unable to get employment. That has dropped down to about half. And I'll tell you, it's dropped down for a number of reasons. One, the credentialing program I talked about. Two, the embracing of all the employers that are out there. And three, the great academic institutions that are helping us train our soldiers. We run programs, for example, there's a program run at Fort Hood as well called Shifting Gears, where we train soldiers to be mechanics. And the last couple versions of the program, every single soldier who's gone through the program was offered a job on the way out. So it's in my mind, it's a moral obligation to make sure our soldiers have a smooth takeoff. It's also a financial obligation because that's less money the taxpayers have to pay for unemployment compensation as those soldiers go out and continue to contribute to society.
That's pretty incredible, sir. I mean, you know, as I'm looking at it, I hear about even the credentialing process. I have been following that for quite some time. And so I'm very, very happy to hear about kind of, you know, especially you've got combat medics. I mean, these guys have seen it, you know, front and center. They've been out on the battlefield and they've handled a number of different complicated cases. And then also for the truck drivers, I mean, I know, you know, the Army, the Marines and everybody else, they all have these truck drivers who really support the infrastructure the military, but now can support the infrastructure of the United States, get that CDL license. Are we looking to expand those kind of certification programs for other careers, or maybe even provide even internship programs? So if it's a public affairs person or somebody else, they can already be dialed into maybe a track that's on the private sector or an NGO sector or whatever the case is. Are we looking at that even more?
Absolutely. Every MOS that we have, we're looking at what kind of credentials they need to be successful as they transition out of the active Guard or Reserve force to make sure they're set up for success. So I think this is a program that will continue to expand. And I think part of the expansion is also the great employers that are out there. I'd like to give you one example, if that's okay. There's a company called Fastport, set up by a great American named Bill McClellan, who has set up a program or a company essentially as a link or bridge between soldiers who want to transition out and become truck drivers, commercial truck drivers. The average age of a truck driver in the U.S. is about 55. So we have a potential crisis in the future being able to man all our trucks across the country. And he has invested his personal fortune, his time, his energy, and his effort in order to do that. If you talk to Bill, he's an incredibly excited guy. He's very passionate about what he does. And one time I asked him, I said, Bill, why do you do this? You don't have to. You're financially successful. He's done a number of things in business. And he looked at me and said, my dad was treated very poorly when he came back from Vietnam. He said, this generation of soldiers should never have to go through what he went through. So his goal, it's very aggressive. He wants to hire 50,000 veterans a year. Between all the services and making sure they have a job. Bill's an incredible American, but I'll tell you, there are great Americans just like him who are out there trying to be a conduit or support or an employer of veterans that we have.
You know, I'm glad that you put that kind of information out because, you know, our veterans need to hear about these companies like FastPro. You say it's called FastPro or Fastport?
Port,
about Fastport, and Bill, who's out there hiring and dedicating. And I'm hearing, too, from a lot of people who haven't served but had maybe their father served or maybe they had a relative who served. Are you getting that, too, General, in terms of a lot of people who may not have served or may not have worn the uniform, but they want to contribute in some form or fashion?
Absolutely. It's amazing from walking through an airport to walking in a community and seeing the great support we have across the nation, and that support does generate and turn into employment opportunities, support for our soldiers, and it's from the president to Congress to our leaders across every town, country, and state that we have. It's amazing the support we have, and anything we've asked for across the board, we've gotten the support we need, both in terms of emotional support as well as financial and equipment support.
As we look at it, and you've mentioned a couple of things, and I'm really, really happy to hear this, how much education is focused in on education and kind of, hey, listen, you know, looking at your career, not only in the military, but also further on, and what education programs are you guys pushing at HRC in really to encourage the, and I'm assuming that's both enlisted as well as officer, but what education programs are you really kind of encouraging people to take advantage of as you are in the military?
Absolutely, Derek. There are really kind of two tracks where we educate and develop our leaders. We have a professional military education, which is available for soldiers from the rank of sergeant all the way to sergeant major, the rank of lieutenant all the way to general officer, where we have a military education system that develops, trains, and sets them up for the next rank across the board. We also do the tuition assistance, which I talked about, to the tune of about $230 million last year across all three components, allowing the soldier to self-develop on their off-duty time. The other issue is the advanced civil schooling, where we send primarily officers to academic institutions from Ivy League down to state schools across the board to get a variety of educational opportunities that make them better officers, make them better NCOs while they're in uniform, and then when they go back to their community as citizens, are better able to contribute to what they do.
You know, as we begin looking on that, I want to touch on that. We got to take a quick break. I want to touch on that because you're really kind of talking about the soldiers getting out into the community, getting out to the schools. I want to hear about any kind of stories that you may have as it relates to that, because that's really a positive thing, because we need to educate the people in the public public about what the military does. A lot of times there's not enough education and outreach and people understanding the sacrifices that are being made by our service members. So I want to talk about that when we come back. We're talking to Major General Thomas C. Siemens. He's Commanding General of Army Human Resources Command. I want to give the website. So if anybody ever wants to take a look at it, it's hrc.army.mil. You can take a look at it and see what's going on so that you can understand the conversation we're having today. But I also want to give another website the general gave is fastport.com. So if you're a veteran, this company is hiring drivers, and you've got the other pieces like that great transition program. If you become a driver, you're going to always probably be employed. So this is just one company out of many who are out there and supporting our veterans. So thank you, General, for mentioning that. We'll be right back after this break. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we've been having a great conversation about what's going on with the Army, but not necessarily talking about combatant commands or any other commands. We're talking about the Human Resources Command, a unique part of the Army in terms of, you know, making sure that our soldiers are ready, making sure that the transitions are made correctly, making sure that we have an effective fighting force. And these are the people who do this kind of stuff. We've got the Commanding General of Army Human Resources Command, or called HRC. He's Major General Thomas C. Siemens. We've got him on the line right now. He's been telling us about what the Army is doing in terms of soldier readiness and also soldier transition as we kind of wind down the force after being in years of combat and looking towards the future. You know, sir, as we begin looking at it, and, you know, we've got all these education programs, are you hearing positive things out there in terms of, you know, our military, whether it be enlisted or whether it be officers, getting out to schools and their exposure level for students who've not necessarily been around maybe a military person, but they are starting to kind of understand what the military does because they're in the same classroom with this person? Are you hearing anything like that?
Absolutely. I can tell you firsthand, the Army's been very good to me. One of the things that they allowed me to do is to go to Harvard, to the Kennedy School, where I came in contact with a number of great citizens from around the world who, in many cases, never met anybody in the military. And one of the greatest compliments I think I ever got was when someone, after a discussion, in some cases a heated discussion, would look at me and say, I have a different appreciation for those people in uniform. And I think that's not atypical. I think our soldiers and officers who go out to academic institutions and communities and have those kind of discussions, and they get educated by those experiences as well as educate others.
You know, as we begin kind of looking at it and kind of saying going towards the future, are education programs going to kind of be the mandate, especially as we talked about how we talked about soldiers getting promoted? Are we really, really kind of pushing that, hey, listen, no matter whether you're enlisted or officer, you need to take advantage and get that education? Is that going to be kind of the push for the future?
Derek, I would tell you, it has been the push and will continue to be the push to make sure we have the most educated forces out there. Like I said, about one out of every three soldiers has a degree today, and commanders and leaders across the Army continue to encourage soldiers to get the education, to develop themselves and become better NCOs and better officers.
You know, you've got some unique programs out there and kind of unique certain things. You've got foreign language programs, cyber programs. You know, cyber's the hot stuff right now. What's going to is the growth in terms of these unique jobs and unique educational programs to kind of get a unique workforce? Is that coming on board right now with the cyber and other areas? Where is that going?
Absolutely, across the board. The Army, like the other services, are standing up cyber forces to make sure that we stay safe as a nation and as a military in the cyber domain against anybody who would want to do us harm. So that's a big growth industry, and we're bringing them in from our soldiers, where we send them to extensive training, to officers who come in every year. So that's one of our main areas of growth. We also have a fair amount of growth in the special operations community, which in large part has a foreign language component to it as well. Those are the great warriors who go out to around the world and make sure that they can train local forces and through a soft agenda make our world a better place.
You know, as we began looking at that, and it seems as if that need, the cyber and the language skills, and that, you know, those diplomatic skills, those civil affairs and all those other kind of people, those are kind of going to, you know, even that intelligence components with the language, it seems as if that's going to be some of the high need pieces of the military. Is that the case, sir?
Oh, absolutely. For example, foreign area officers, where we have officers in every embassy around the world, and many of the embedded with many of the military armies. Civil affairs officers who focus on setting up community and governance. Special operations who are there with the FAOs, all together combined to be able to apply our military national ability around the globe and making sure we stay safe.
As we think about it, you've got a number of unique areas under you. You've got this military postal service agency. What's that about? So are you making sure that all the people in the military, just all the people in the Army, are getting the mail as they need to? Or what's the mission of that?
Derek, is we have 76 Army post offices around the world, 21 of them in 93 different countries that are supported worldwide. So wherever there are soldiers, wherever there are diplomats, wherever there are members of the armed forces, we have a post office to allow them to get mail and to send mail. And I'll tell you, having been deployed, when you see a soldier get a letter or a package, regardless how tough their day has been, there's a smile on their face and a sense of a connection to being home. I mean, email and phone calls are one thing, but getting something in the mail is a special thing. And we are the executive agent for the Military Postal Service, so we bring all that together, both the personal and the official mail, for any soldier around the globe.
You know, you're putting a smile on my face because I remember those days when that mail call came, and that was like one of the best moments when you're out there being deployed, sir. So I definitely remember that, and I know how critical that mail call can be because you're getting them snacks possibly, right?
Absolutely. You get those snacks,
and you may be getting something from a family member or something that can't be sent by email or done by Skype or anything like that. We got to take a quick break, sir. We're going to come right back, and I want to kind of go into, you know, we got the voting thing that's going on right now, elections that are happening. I want to talk about the elections, because you have a big component that really tries to make sure our soldiers are getting a chance to vote and be a part of this upcoming presidential election. I want to talk about that when we come back. We're talking to Major General Thomas C. Siemens. He's the commanding general of the U.S. Army Human Resources Command. You can find their site at hrc.army.mil. We're having a great conversation about how they support the military, how they make sure people are ready, but also when people are ready to leave out, how they make sure they transition the right way. We'll be right back after this break. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. George on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. George on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we've been having a great conversation about the human resources component that focuses in on the Army, making sure our soldiers are ready, making sure that they are ready to get back into the fight when it's necessary, to do what they need to do. They get the right education, they get the right support, the right personnel support, and everything else. But then also when they're ready to transition, they're making sure they're getting the right support to transition successfully and get back into society the right way. We're talking to the commanding general of the U.S. Army Human Resources Command, Major General Thomas C. Siemens. He's on the line with us right now, and we've been kind of breaking some things down, and he's been really kind of giving some insight on what HRC does. Sir, we've got this election coming up. It's always been a hot issue about, you know, soldiers voting, especially when they're overseas. What is your command doing in order to ensure that?
Well, we own the Army Voting Program. And so part of that is making sure every soldier has the opportunity to vote regardless of where they are in the world. Every family member who's eligible to vote has the ability to vote as well. So we take it very seriously. We have a pretty aggressive program to making sure that we get the word out. And as evidence of the great work done here at HRC by our team, 18% increase in requests for federal postcard applications, in other words, being able to vote absentee, and about 300% increase in inquiries on voting questions on states, primaries, et cetera. What we tell soldiers across the board is we want soldiers to vote. We don't care who they vote for or what their position is on anything, but we want them to exercise their fundamental right that we defend every day by being in uniform. So it's important that they get out there, make their voice heard. We also want them to be informed, and I think that goes to the 300% increase in inquiries. I think the soldiers want to be informed about what the issues are, want to be informed about the candidates, and then cast their vote. At the end of the day, the military is the military. We take an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and we support the civilian leadership of whichever party is in charge.
Have you seen improvement in the program? I mean, you know, there were previous years, and you've probably seen it before, where people were saying, hey, listen, you know, the votes didn't get there in time and all that sort of kind of stuff. Has there been a lot more efficiency built into the program where we don't have those kind of issues anymore?
Well, I think we're doing a great job of getting the word out in terms of when the suspenses are. We leverage a lot of social media. We get senior leaders engaging their formations, encouraging them to vote. And we've done a number of public service announcements within the military, within the Army, to try and get the word out so everybody understands what the deadlines are in order to be able to do that. You know, at the end of the day, it's a personal choice on whether or not they vote, and if they do vote, who they vote for. But we want everybody to have the opportunity, if they choose to cast their vote and have their voice heard.
You know, you mentioned something early in this show that you really deal with kind of the casualty and mortuary affairs side of it. That's a critical component, a sad component sometimes, but so very important, especially as someone has maybe possibly made a transition or been killed or wounded in service of their country. What does that division do? Is that the ones who really kind of they talk to the families, they deal with bodies, unfortunately? What do they do in the mission?
Well, Derek, they do a number of things. We run the policy, but we also have a hands-on approach to the families and when involved with the remains. There are 32 casualty assistance centers worldwide who are designed to give the local support to the soldier, the family, and the unit to make sure they get the support they need. We provide overhead cover from across the board, everything from the remains coming back into Dover, treating them, the distinguished transfer remains at Dover, where family members have the opportunity to be present, all the way up to when the soldier is interred, and beyond, to be quite honest. Every casualty has a casualty assistance officer whose job it is to help the family through this most challenging point in their life and making sure they get the support and the entitlements and benefits that they're entitled to based on their lost soldier. It is a tough time. It's a sad time. And having been both a casualty representative for the Chief of Staff of the Army at Dover, as well as for some of our fallen downrange, it's a very humbling experience. As you meet these great families, I got to tell you, Derek, I ask myself sometimes, you know, where do we get these great Americans
right.
that offer up their sons, their daughters, their brothers, sisters, mothers, and dads to our nation and accept the reality that they're in harm's way?
Right, right. It's got to be one of the most humbling experiences. And one thing that struck me, what you said earlier, you've got these call centers, and you've got it seems as if your focus, sir, is very much making sure that if somebody picks up the phone, that they can reach somebody, they can talk to a human being. Is that more in the direction of where you're headed? Because, you know, we got a customer society in which, you know, sometimes we call these automated numbers and it just keeps on, you know, punching us around. But especially when you've got soldiers and you've got people who've lost people, you want to make sure that personal touch is there, right?
Absolutely. When a family's lost a soldier, that's handled at a special level in terms of care for the family. The call center I talked about earlier is for more routine actions. And my Command Sergeant Major Jefferson, and I have both gone down to the call center and actually taken calls from time to time. It's really interesting to see what kind of queries we get from around the world. But the bottom line, at the end of the call, we want whoever's called, whether that's an Army question or something we can refer them to have a positive experience, know that there's a person out there that is there to help them.
You know, as you look at it, sir, we only got a few minutes or a couple minutes. What's the future of the Army and future Army Human Resources and Resource Command? What are you seeing down the road and downrange, sir?
Well, I think for Human Resources, we'll continue to leverage technology. You know, at the beginning of the conversation, I talked about coming into the Army, didn't even have computers.
Right.
Now it's a fundamental part of what we do. We want to continue to leverage that technology to make sure we're taking care of soldiers and families. But at the end of the day, we never want to lose the human touch you just talked about. We want to make sure that we have soldiers, officers, and NCOs and civilians who are here at HRC who can provide the human touch and the judgment to take care of the force that's out there. I think things like we're experimenting maybe with avatars.
Mm-hmm.
To see if there's some potential to increase the customer satisfaction or ability to connect with the community. There's a website, there's Facebook, there's all kinds of different things that we're using to try and leverage the ability to talk to our customers, the soldiers, and families around the world.
Outstanding, sir. Thank you so much. And we're going to have you back, especially as time progresses. Thank you for what you're doing, supporting the soldiers and making sure that, you know, we have a ready operational workforce in terms of our service members and who are ready to go around the world at any point in time. So thank you to you and all your people for what they're doing. And we want people to make sure that they know about this and not just know about the other pieces of the Army that they always hear about, but they know about these support functions that really make the military go. Thank you, sir.
Cool. Thanks, Derek. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.